Hey guys, I'm Hudson Phillips. I am a writer and producer from Atlanta, Georgia, and this is Script Blast, a podcast to help you write better screenplays and write a better life. Just a quick reminder about our brand new and absolutely free online workshop, Blast Off, that gives you a step-by-step guide to making your screenwriting career a reality. You can sign up for free at scriptblast.com. Today on the show, I get to hang out with one of my favorite filmmakers and favorite people in general, Will Dennis. Will is the writer, director, and star of the very funny and very charming rom-com Vanilla, which you can watch right now wherever you watch movies, and I highly recommend looking it up. Just take a look at the trailer. I promise you'll fall in love. Will talks about his background in the startup tech world and how that prepared him for making movies, how he pulled off a feature film with just five people in a van, and walks us through his tips on writing better dialogue. Here's my conversation with Will. Will, how's it going?
I am doing great, Hudson. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's funny to answer this question because we literally just asked this question of each other and answered it before we started recording. So you already know the answer. People listening don't
know
the answer.
That's true. We can get right into the meat and potatoes of this conversation.
The meat of it. First of all, major congrats because you have a movie out.
Thank you. Yeah, it feels good. It feels good. It feels a little surreal. And I was thinking about that the other day of being like, I guess I'm done. Like there's always like something and like there's, you know, a little bit more promotion and stuff like that. But like just this like never ending checklist of things that it's like is on my wall in my bedroom.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Does it end? Is there a kind of a horizon in sight for this film? And then you just move on to the next one.
I think a little bit there's kind of like a pushing the boat out into the water, at least for a little while. I think I'm going to try to promote it a little bit more. But you know, I don't see that lasting for more than like another week or two. And then, I think where it's going to come into play is when I just try to, you know, think about my next project and how to, use Vanilla, in that
ride,
context.
Ride
and say, hey, you can check out this other, yeah. Hey, you can check out this other movie, you know, here's like how it did and here's why it might be an indication that, you know, you should work with me on this next thing.
Yeah. So real quick, pitch everybody on Vanilla. What's it about? How do you describe it to people?
Yeah, sure. Vanilla is a road trip romantic comedy. We're kind of an uptight entrepreneur and a more carefree comedian end up going on what is essentially a very long first date. They go on a road trip to New Orleans and they kind of learn about each other on the way and, you know, goes well, doesn't go that well. And ideally, you know, we had a lot of fun making it. So ideally people have a good time watching it, but it's a comedy. So ideally you have some laughs and can vicariously go on a road trip with these two characters.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it too. Cause, I don't know if I've told you this, but whenever somebody asks me, hey, what's the best film you've seen at a film festival? I always say Vanilla.
That's so nice to hear. I appreciate that.
And a big part of that is that it is just, you do feel like you're on the journey with these two characters and you ride the emotional journey with them. You have fun with them. You get heartbroken with them. I think that's a really hard thing to pull off. And a lot of, a lot of film festival movies are just kind of like darker or they're too serious or they're just trying so hard. And there's something about Vanilla, I'm sure it's not effortless, but there's something that feels so effortless and so freeing and just so fun and so charming. How do you make that? Or maybe talk a little bit about what went into the making of that, or maybe how that idea started.
Well, first of all, thank you. As far as like process and tone, I mean, I think there was two big pieces. One was like the writing and spent a lot of time with the script, a lot of time kind of collaborating with Kelsey, who plays Kimmy in the film, one of the leads, and then my DP and good friend Tom. and I would kind of do a draft, and then we'd maybe read through it, or I'd do a draft and we'd talk about a scene. And they were kind of like, I would say, like the first audience, and were helping us dial in kind of the tone of it. Because I think with comedy or any film, really, it's like, I almost think of it as like on a 0 to 10 scale. And like, if you go from 0 to 10, as far as like tone is concerned, you'll, you know, throw people off. And so it's like, how do you keep it in a consistent kind of range so people get comfortable with the type of movie they're watching? And I kind of wanted this movie to be something that was like funny, but not necessarily like slapstick and dramatic, but not necessarily like sad or serious. And so trying to kind of keep it within those guardrails and, tried to achieve that obviously as much as possible through the script. And then a kind of blessing in disguise, I think, was that we ended up shooting the movie in two parts. We shot the road trip piece, which was kind of the middle of the movie, kind of like the 25th to the 70th minute. And then we ended up shooting the beginning and the end of the movie probably like two, three months later. And the benefit of that was like I had time to edit the middle before shooting the beginning and the end. So I actually was able to, like watch the middle of the movie, which is kind of an interesting thing to have a rough cut of, because you can, you're not dealing with like exposition and their characters have kind of already been established, at least like in the story. And so you're dealing with a little bit more like scenes that are more around tone or character development or plot development. And so through that process, I was actually like, oh man, this movie's like feeling a little bit too serious in these moments. And then like, okay, maybe we need to have it be like a little bit funnier up top so people know they're watching a comedy. There was a little bit of like a push and a pull there, which, you know, wasn't, I can't take credit for it, other than, you know, the cast and crew having obligations that prevented them from shooting for a couple months. And so I used the time to edit, and it was a blessing.
So the only reason you split it up was because of scheduling?
Yeah. So we like set aside, okay, we're going to shoot this film, at least most of it, on this road trip. And that'll take us like 8 or 9 days. And then let's just like get that in the can. And then we'll figure out the beginning and the end in New York City. And the goal obviously was to like shoot things, you know, the next week or the next couple weeks. But Kelsey ended up getting like a new job, which is, you know, great. But she went from flexible and open and available to like, hey, you know, weekends are going to be what I have available, which I totally get. Yeah. When it's this kind of project, that's the nature of the beast. So I was like, all right, cool. Let's like regroup when you have a little bit more time. And, you know, the upside was we got to edit the film and understand a little bit about the middle. And the downside is, you know, it was December and we're trying to make New York City look like it was summertime. So, it was, you know, give and take.
Yeah. That's really brilliant though, because, well, first of all, how much of the script changed during that period? Was it drastic or was it just little tweaks?
I think the script didn't. So there was like actually three phases. There was shoot the road trip for 8 days, couple months break where we did the edit of that section, shot the beginning of the end, or the beginning and the end. And then we took 3 or 4 months and edited the beginning and the end. And so we had a full feature cut, and then did some test screenings and found out that the beginning wasn't really working for people. Like I could feel it. Test audiences could feel it. I mean, test audiences, I'm talking about like my friends in an apartment. People were like, yeah, you know, the first 10 minutes is like pretty creaky. And then I felt like I started to like it. And so actually that caused me to rewrite some stuff and shoot some new material like in like April or May the following year. So, which was, you know, the nice thing about being in the movie is I could be like, hey, I can, you know, write some new scenes for myself and we can make this happen without too much lift.
Is that something you'll plan on, like actually plan on with future movies, because you kind of did it accidentally on this one?
I mean, I would love to do that. I think what scares me and is maybe why people don't do it is just people's availability is so subject to change that, like, I feel like when someone leaves set after principal photography, it's like, maybe you'll see them again and maybe they can right. become available again, but maybe they won't. So I think I kind of had the luxury of being available and I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on the nature of this project. My next one is going to be, you know, probably something where I'm working with talent that I don't know if I'd be able to get them back after a principal photography shoot. And right. I also don't know if, like, I don't know if it would be chopped up as, like, conveniently either. As far as, like, road trip is such, like, a tangible piece of the puzzle that you can say, like, let's shoot this and then we'll fill in the other pieces. What I think might be a smart thing to do is, like, whatever budget I have is maybe, like, being aggressive with the amount I want to save for principal production to then say, hey, I want to assume there's going to be, you know, 3 or 4 either shoot days or reshoot days or pickup days or whatever you want to call them, where after we do some screenings of this thing, we're going to know there's 3 or 4 pieces of the puzzle we want to pick up.
Yeah, it's a thing that big budget movies do all the time because they obviously have tons of money and they plan on having the cast back at a certain time. And you generally in indie film, you just can't afford to do that. I mean, you can barely afford the days that you do have. On Vanilla, yeah. You had a pretty small and kind of fluid crew. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, for the road trip piece, there was 5 of us, including the 2 actors. So it was like me, Kelsey, we had a sound mixer, a DP, and kind of like a producer, you know, fixer, do it all kind of person. And then when we were back in New York, we were able to have a little bit more people around just because it was in the city and that was where we were from. So, you know, we were able to say, hey, can you like help us out for a couple days or a day? Yeah. And so, but it didn't get, you know, significantly more. We never really had like an AC or a camera department. There was one day where we had a second camera and, you know, we joked around that our grip truck was just this suitcase that we would pull around that was full of like extension cords and light bulbs and like a China ball and, you know, really like practical yeah. stuff that we could, you know, throw a couple light bulbs on dimmers and shoot it.
Yeah. But that stuff is so exciting to me. And I wish that more filmmakers and writers especially could recognize that like you don't have to have this giant budget, giant crew, giant cast in order to make something. But I'm curious, did you with Vanilla, that was always the intention? Like go back to even before you wrote it, was your initial idea, hey, I'm going to write something that I can actually just go out and make with my friends?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I was like, it was less like I'm going to write a script. And it was more like I'm making a movie. I kind of like got Kelsey committed and Tom committed like around this like rough premise. And I was just like, and I knew they were, you know, creative and people who love to make things too. So I was just like, hey, I have this like rough idea. Let's do it. I'm going to write a script. Are you free in late August? You know, which was, I think, you know, in like 2 or 3 months to hit the road and do this thing. And then I kind of, you know, almost had like a personal green light for production before I had started writing the script, which was like a kind of a fun way to go about it. And obviously, yeah. you know, the script could have always, can always use a little bit more time, but for sure it was a commitment to making something first and then like figuring out what and how second. And I think like it was kind of unique because it, put some financial guardrails on it and put some story guardrails on it and really like forces you to be, I think, like creative with the how you're going to shoot it and also like the what you're going to shoot. And I think honestly, like in hindsight, it benefited us that we kind of committed to the low budget nature of it because it almost became like the natural light and the handheld, you know, it becomes an aesthetic. And when, you know, you can tell things aren't not that they're unprofessionally lit, but you can tell when it's, you know, it doesn't look like there's you know, a lot of methodical composition and a lot of methodical high key lighting, and every shot doesn't look super attractive, but I think as a whole, it actually really works super effectively.
Yeah, there's a real intimacy to it and a real just naturalism to it that really fits the material.
Yeah, and that was something that, like, kudos to my friend and DP Tom, that, like, you know, a lot of, I think, DPs might have been a little scared of what I was proposing and being like, no, you know, let's use this camera that, you know, is a small, like, nice DSLR, Sony a7S II, and we'll do handheld. It's good and low light. We'll be light on our feet. We'll be kind of improvisational, and we'll go out and we'll shoot it, and we'll make sure it sounds excellent. And I trust your ability to, you know, pull focus and find the light and our faces, and we'll storyboard as much as we can. But, you know, I know I've had conversations with other DPs, and, you know, a lot of them are like, well, you know, I would need this much gear. I need this camera. I need this or that or the other. And Tom, to his credit, was like, yeah, man, that sounds cool. Like, it'll be a challenge, but we'll make it work. And I mean, honestly, there's certain shots in this movie where I'm like, oh man, you did such a great job. It looks so pretty. I'm so lucky to have had him involved. And, you know, it was just due to his, you know, him being creative and positive throughout the process.
Yeah. So I imagine Will, the actor, has got to be really excited by the kind of improvisational style. Will, the writer's got to be excited by just the run and gun nature. Is Will, the director, kind of like, oh, wait, let's pump the brakes and do something really cool because this is my debut and I want it to, you know, look awesome and do cool shots and be flashy? Was there any bit of that battle between yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think the writer was definitely trying to make sure that we were getting the right story, and I think the director and actor were kind of holding on for dear life. I mean, we storyboarded a fair amount, so I think that helped the director side of things in terms of, like, knowing what we wanted and where. And obviously, like, you know, sometimes we would show up to a location and that would get crumpled up and thrown out the window. And then, you know, AD Will would come out and try to figure out, like, what the alternative, you know, options were and how much time we had. And then, you know, I would try to understand, like, the tone of the scene and then, you know, just cross my fingers that I could deliver a performance that matched Kelsey's. Because the nature of the project was one that we didn't really ever do playback. And I was almost never behind monitor. There's a handful of scenes that I'm not in, but a lot of it was just trusting, you know, Kelsey and trusting Tom and trying my best to get everything set up for the shot and, like, communicate as well as I could what the shot and the scene was about and then switch to acting. But I bet you more times than I would be happy to admit where I, you know, wouldn't be acting because I would be thinking about somebody else's performance, or I wouldn't be directing because I'd be acting. And I'd have to be like, you know what, guys, we're gonna have to go again because A, I wasn't acting, I was focused on directing, or B, I don't even know what you did in that performance because I was busy on my own performance. So it was, I mean, a lot of respect to all the people who are out there who can comfortably act and direct, because I felt like I was, you know, hanging on by my fingernails a lot.
Yeah, you kind of did yourself a favor by writing a character, though, that is, what's the best way to describe him? You know, he's a little square, he's a little stuck up, he's a little, you know, he's not overly emotional. So I mean, like, you could kind of be distracted in a scene and nobody would notice. Yeah, it kind of fit.
Yeah, there were no scenes where I was like, and a single tear rolls down his cheek. Like, right. So I think you're right. And I think that was fortunate, because I think for my first crack at it, I was definitely felt maxed out more than once. Yeah. And then you couple that with, like, you know, a road trip and figuring out, you know, logistics along the way. And it was one of some of the most fun I've had, but yeah, felt fully maxed out in a couple of situations.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's go back, because we met at one of your, I think it was one of your first festival screenings for Vanilla, when we were screening This World Alone. This would have been early last year. And but I know nothing about your life before that moment, so I'm kind of curious. growing up, did you always love movies? Was that always a passion? Was that always something you wanted to do? And was it always the multi-hyphenate, or which one came first?
I mean, I was like the kid. I do remember like being, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, running around with my parents' video camera and kind of telling my friends to, you know, dress up or put on wigs and do this and do that, or doing like stop motion animation with my friends, you know, frame by frame, doing like car accidents and stuff. And was pretty interested in it in high school as well. And so it was always something where I was like, oh, this is really fun, and knew it was a passion. But I never really got serious about it for a little while. And when I was in college, I kind of got swept up in the startup and the tech kind of world, and started a couple small companies, generally of varying levels of failure. But they, you know, taught me a lot, and ended up like working on some cool companies in the like kind of consumer software space. Up until I was about 26, and then I started doing this consulting gig in Israel for a friend's company, and every weekend I would make like a short episode of this just terrible show, but with my friends, and we would just like I'd like write it and edit it and release it like all in the same day. It was just like kind of an exercise, and I was like, oh man, this is so much fun. And by the time the end of that kind of tech consulting work was wrapping up, I was like, you know what, do I want to go back into the startup world? Or do I want to kind of take a break from that and really, you know, dive a little bit more aggressively into this filmmaking stuff? Cause I felt like I had kind of got distracted by it. And then I kind of, was re-inspired and kind of reawakened. And it's still how I feel when I'm on a film set. I just feel like I'm kind of like, at, you know, at recess, or, you know, it's just so fun. And so I moved back to the States and called one of my friends in film, in the New York film scene, who's her name's Alexandra Beyer. She's a producer. She's like been kind of like my indie film Sherpa as far as like connecting me to people and giving me advice. She's great. And she recommended I work on this movie called We the Animals, which was like turned out to be, fortunately for me, like a Sundance caliber project. It got into Sundance, and but it was my first movie, and I talked to the production manager and I was like, hey, I'm like coming from the tech world, and I remember him being like, cool, like I think we have an option for you to be like the office PA. And I was like, so like, and we talked a little bit about that, and I was like, yeah, and like I was like, yeah, like I, if possible, I'd like to be like, you know, close to camera, like close to the director, and like be just like really, you know, seeing what that's all about. And he's like, to his credit, he's my buddy Joe, and he's like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. And I was like, all right, I mean, I appreciate the honesty, and this gig will be like upstate in New York for like a month or something. So that sounds like it'll be fun and interesting, and so I decided to do it, and. That's awesome. Just had a really great time. The producers were super nice and open, like, and Tom, I met actually Tom, who shot Vanilla, on that movie. And I met Lion, who did sound for us. He did sound for that movie. And nice. The producers, Jeremy, Andrew, and Christina, were like super, you know, nice and warm and welcoming and giving me a ton of advice as I was kind of pestering them with questions. So that kind of like, it was my first step into indie film, and it was just like, and everyone on that crew, it was funny because everyone's like, no movies are ever this cool or good or nice. Or like, it was, everyone was just like so charming and cool and fun. And so I made like, you know, a handful of friends, and I did a couple more indie films as like a PA, and just like meeting people and learning and, you know, bringing crafty to whoever wanted it, like whatever bottom of the totem pole stuff. Yeah. Made some kind of, I'll just call them short films. I'm not super proud of a couple of those. And then, yeah, after like a couple years of that, just kind of like, learning the indie film scene and PAing and figuring out what it actually takes to make a, you know, quote unquote real movie. I was like, all right, I want to do this. And I recruited some friends and we set out to make Vanilla. So it was like, I still feel like I'm obviously have so much to learn and so much like to learn from other filmmakers. So, that was kind of the expedited version of like, seventh grade Will to present day Will.
I think that's amazing. And I'm curious because you clearly have this, what's the right term, kind of can-do attitude, right? I mean, from the fact that you're like, I want to make films. I'm going to just do whatever it takes to do it. Is that something that was always in you? Did that kind of come out of the startup world that you just learned lessons like that? Where does that drive come from inside of you?
I don't know. My therapist says everything's about your childhood. She does say that, but I had a great childhood. So, I think a lot of it was the startup thing. I think I've always been someone who's interested in like doing and making in whatever capacity that might be. I've never been, I would call myself like not super like laid back or relaxed. I like to think of myself as like easygoing. I think people who work with me on projects might unfortunately disagree, but I definitely have a preoccupation with kind of like making and doing stuff. So, and I try to channel that as, you know, as healthy as possible. But I think a lot of it honestly with Vanilla is just like being ignorant about the process and just being like, I want to do this. Let's start putting one foot in front of the other. And acknowledging that like, I'm going to make a bunch of mistakes and the only way to really know what those are going to be is to make them and not worry too much about it, ideally.
Yeah, I found that I am really just the most chill, relaxed person unless I care about it. And then I will fight to the death over it, right? I don't know if that describes you also.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think I can be laid back. And but yeah, if something is like a project that I care about, it becomes a preoccupation. I'm trying to get better at it, honestly, to just like give myself some breaks and some like permission to not be working on something. But I do acknowledge that it does help move projects along.
Yeah, it's funny. I really struggle with that too, because I just always have to be working on something. Like we were waiting on distribution for our next film. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to make an anthology book. So I like made a call out for a bunch of like short story writers and comic book writers and said, hey, everybody with a post-apocalyptic story, let's read them. And I read like 50 of them and chose 30 of them to put in this book and got it printed on Amazon. And then, you know, the pandemic pressed pause on it. But I realized that like, I can't just like sit and wait. Like there's something that I always have to be doing something and checking a box and accomplishing something. But I also struggle with that because I can't tell if that's a good thing or not. It's a great thing in terms of that I actually get stuff done, but I am exhausted all the time. And I may not have time for friends or family or things that really matter. And I'm constantly just battling that inside my brain.
Yeah. And I think I definitely empathize with that. Something that has been helpful for me, at least mentally, is just being like really diligent about planning and kind of like time boxing and treating different aspects of my life with almost equal importance, being like, you know, this chunk of time is for writing and this chunk of time is for socializing, and like defending them almost against each other. And so like, you know, I I wake up pretty early and I write for a few hours, and I just know that that's the time that I defend to do that. And I'm less productive later in the day, and I also get distracted, and it's just like, all right, that's that. And then similarly, I know that like once 7:30, 8 PM rolls around, I'm going to defend that time to be, you know, social or, you know, spend time with people I care about. And so that's been helpful for me. It's not foolproof, but it helps me kind of like justify the ways I'm spending my time, I guess.
I was going to say, I did this experiment at the beginning of the year where, because I was really struggling with this, and that was kind of like my New Year's resolution to figure out time management a little bit better. So what I did was I said, what if I tried to plan every hour of the week? So I got a calendar out. I wrote all, you know, 24 hours, 7 days a week on there. And then I assigned activities to this. And I did exactly what you said. Writing's in the morning because that's the time where I'm freshest. And I know if I try to write at night, it's not going to work out. Try to protect time for family in the evenings. Work time divided up per hour during the day with different clients and things. And it was awesome. And it was really a breakthrough. And it's funny, the pandemic again just kind of caused everything to fall apart and schedules got all out of whack.
Totally.
Yeah, but I love that. I love that kind of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely for people like us, and it sounds like we're similar types of personalities, where it's like you kind of need that structure, or else you'll kind of eat yourself up as far as trying to like always be productive, which I don't think is in fact sustainable.
Right.
It might be in short periods of time, but like for years, I don't think it really works.
Yeah.
And it also, I think that exercise is so good because it allows you to see like trade-offs of your time. And I don't know if you ended up throwing like percentages on those different categories, but that can be a fun exercise as well, where you're like, oh, I spend 3% of my time reading. Is that too much or is that enough?
Well, what it does is it calls you to assign a value to it, right? Because it's a budget for time, because time is you never get your time back, right? Like we budget for money all the time. Well, I don't do a great job of that either. But in theory, you budget with money all the time, but nobody budgets with time really, right? Because they're just kind of on a roll. They wake up, they go to work, they work out, they watch TV, they go to bed, right? And you don't realize just how much time you're spending, especially social media is kind of the ultimate eater of that time.
Oh, totally. And then it's also like you add the next layer where it's like not all time is created equal. It's like some hours are more productive or less productive or more available or less available. And it's, I don't know, it's a fun puzzle, whether or not like I've done that a couple times, and it's always like definitely a helpful exercise. And then how long it like sticks is like always the open question.
Yeah, I know, but that's funny. This conversation is really reminding me of it. And I really I'm going to get up tomorrow. I'm going to list out all my time again. But I've heard of this idea of high productivity times of the day and low productivity times of the day. So like there are times in the day where you're really, really sharp and on top of things. So for me, that's generally the morning or up until maybe noon or 1 o'clock. There are times where you're completely dead. So for me, that's like 5 to 6, 4 to 6, somewhere in there. So like the idea is that you make sure that you're not doing important tasks in the afternoon, and make sure you are doing important tasks in the morning. I heard, what's the dude's name from Parks and Rec? Mustache, totally blowing my mind right now. Yeah. Anyways, he walked through his day the other day, and he was saying that like he works if he's in his wood shop in the morning, he'll do all the like the technical like cutting and measuring and math kind of stuff. In the afternoon, he'll kind of do the sanding and the repetitive actions because he knows his brain isn't as sharp and he's more likely to make a mistake. And I thought that put a really clear picture of the high productivity times of the day and the low productivity times of the day.
Yeah. When when your fingers and thumbs are on the line, you want to pick those productivity hours carefully.
So I'm curious, coming out of the startup world, because I kind of view, every film is a startup, right? I mean, like it's essentially the same model. I'm curious, any lessons that you learned being in that world that you've been able to apply to filmmaking?
I mean, they are definitely, I do think they are similar, startups and film, in certain ways. I mean, your script, I don't know if this is like an original analogy or not, but it's like your script is kind of like your business plan, and you have to recruit a team around that business plan, and that business plan needs funding, and a film, you know, needs all those pieces of the puzzle that a business has. It's, you know, how many people do you need to make this happen? What's the market for this? You know, what's the competitive landscape like for films that might be like, you know, what are comparable films look like? And what, you know, how they perform. There's some market validation stuff. But I think there's the attitude of like, you know what, this, I think with this, it's the same with startups, same with film, is like, no one's probably going to care about your project as much as you do. So like, right, you gotta be nice to people and you gotta keep the ball rolling. And, if you, you know, stop pushing it forward, then it's probably going to stop, getting pushed forward. So, I definitely think the startup mentality was helpful for the filmmaking process. And I think also like thinking about it as a process that you're going to learn and tweak and adjust, and, you don't know everything on the outset, but that's okay. And, something that I've kind of borrowed from, I think the startup side of things is just being really proactive about reaching out to people and networking and, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, doing this. What do you think? Like just trying to get at least 5 or 6 people's opinions on something that's, you know, before you do it. So at least if you act, and this is the thing, like there's still stuff that I'm like, oh, I didn't do that right. But at the very least I had 5 or 6 conversations. So at least I can be like, you know, I did my due diligence. I didn't get the right advice, but at least I got some advice. and yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a small team that you're trying to make, take an idea from nothing to something. So I think in those ways, there's going to be a lot of parallels.
Gosh. Yeah, that's really good. I'm especially curious because I feel like most filmmakers really kind of whore themselves out on social media, and just are constantly bombarding people. And especially your movie just came out and I feel like I've barely seen anything from you. And I mean that as the biggest compliment. Like you have such a minimal and like kind of classy social presence. Is that on purpose? Is it just something that's not of interest to you? How do you find that balance of promoting your things while being chill about it?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had, could say, you know, I'm an elegant and graceful social media user. I think it's more realistically that I find it hard to do well and time consuming to do well. I kind of don't want to just be putting out stuff that's like half-assed. And so I tend to be maybe overly critical around like, you know, what I post and how I share things out. And so, I don't know, I don't want people to feel, and I think, you know, you're kind of just getting a little bit of like a off the cuff therapy answer from me right now, but it's like, I think as an independent filmmaker, there's a little bit of like imposter syndrome, at least I feel it. And a little bit of, you know, it's my project and self-promotion is something that I was taught is like not a good characteristic and not a good quality, as much as social media tells us differently. So I'm definitely trying to become more self-promotional. And for Vanilla, I spent a lot of time thinking about pros and cons of doing some PR around it. And I ended up, you know, pulling the trigger and working with someone, and they've been really helpful in terms of like, you know, just doing a lot of the work that I was a little too maybe shy or scared or self-conscious to do. And I'll, you know, don't you worry, I'll be bombarding your, you know, your social feeds in the next couple of days. I'll do a couple more posts probably, but then I'm also like, I don't know the return on investment with it. You know, it's like, and we can talk about this distribution piece, and that's, you know, a whole conversation, but like, I went with this distributor, Gravitas, and, you know, they're, you know, putting it out there, but it's, you know, it's a movie that doesn't have a lot of famous people in it. And so, you know, a lot of the marketing onus falls on the filmmaker. And I don't have a ton of optics or transparency into the actual sales of the film. I'll get kind of these quarterly reports, which, you know, I assume I'll get in a few months, but I'm both kind of, you know, leaned on to do some marketing, but also not really given much transparency into the actual like bottom of the funnel, if you think about like a digital marketing kind of approach. So, it's been interesting in that way of kind of trying to figure out, okay, like what value is a social post versus an email versus a, a podcast versus a review, you know? And I'm kind of like, the more the merrier, but I don't really, I can't really be scientific about it.
Yeah, not seeing real-time analytics on that. So you can't be like, oh, this worked great, I'm going to do that 12 more times, or this didn't work at all, I can not worry about it.
Exactly. And that's where I think is kind of a blind spot for me. And I think I still can, and maybe I should push a little harder around getting that transparency in those numbers. But, you know, and that's another thing where it's like weighing, you know, indie distribution versus going to a distributor, and there's pros and cons, yada, yada, yada. I think one of the cons of maybe going the more established route is just like, you know, if you are someone who, like myself, is interested in getting kind of in the weeds, you know, I don't know if on this film I'll have really the opportunity to say, okay, if I make a little Instagram video and I target, you know, my lead actress's fan base, and I, you know, do this call to action and they click through, and like what percentage of time do they buy? Like, those are the kinds of things that I do think are, you know, that's just kind of like relatively straightforward marketing, but I don't quite have the tools to do that right now. That was kind of a very long-winded answer to your question about social media.
No, I think that's fascinating for a number of reasons. One is, back to the social media question, is you recognize what you're good at and what you're not, or what you're comfortable with or what you're not, and then you pass off what you're not, which I think is fantastic advice to people, especially to myself, because I try to take on everything. Part of it is because of education. I just want to learn a little bit of everything. Part of it is back what we talked about earlier, where it's just, I just have to do. But part of it is I hate doing a lot of this stuff, and I'm still doing it without passing it on. And that's something I need to get better at that. So I love that you talked about that. I am curious, talking about distribution and stuff, because we're dealing with this right now and trying to figure out that balance. And we definitely, you know, I come from a marketing background, so I want those analytics. I want to see what's working. And not just for this film, I want to be able to apply it in the future, right? Like, if you don't learn from it, how are you going to ever get better at it?
Totally.
But my question for you is, what's important to you in this process, and how do you know if Vanilla is a success for you personally? Like, what's your goalpost?
Yeah. And I think that is a great question. And that's something I've had to ask myself over the last, you know, as it started to get, like, at first it was getting to a film festival, and then I got into a film festival. I was like, cool, that's exciting. And then it was like getting to more film festivals. And then it was, get, you know, distribution. And the distribution piece, honestly, I looked at it kind of like getting into a film festival. It's like, whether or not you get into a film festival doesn't mean your movie is good or bad. It just means that there was some outside third party that kind of like validated your work in some way. And I kind of looked at distribution like that, where I always knew Vanilla was going to be like essentially a resume item. I wanted it to be as good as possible and have as many people see it as possible. But my expectation of making money, or, you know, gaining notoriety from it, was pretty low. And so I was like, can I make something that's good? And can I make something that I can point to when I'm making my next project? Which I'm kind of internalizing as well. It's just like, it's always about the next project to some extent. But for Vanilla, distribution, and why I decided to do distribution versus doing self-distribution, was kind of just an outside validation and being able to tell people that, you know, we crossed this finish line, given these circumstances. And the PR piece was similar, where I was like, I wanted to be able to cross that finish line as well. And you know, that finish line is, you know, getting reviews, getting Rotten Tomato reviews, that kind of thing. And it was kind of a trade-off between that, like, third party credibility. And I, you know, but honestly, I think I might've been able to make maybe more money or be more in control of my financial destiny if I, like, independently distributed. But you know, it's like the trade-off was like, do you want this kind of, like, you know, gold star on your paper or do you want to, or not? And I kind of like opted for the gold star, as, you know, as superficial as that kind of feels, but it feels right. Like, so much of my efforts as an independent filmmaker has been, you know, building up, you know, you build up credibility through your work, and you also build up credibility through the industry and the industry's acknowledgement of your work. So yeah, trying to balance those two things.
Gosh, man, this is hearing you just weigh all those things, knowing that we've been weighing those for months now, is just like this emotional load off of my heart right now, which is really great. But and this, who knows if this is boring to whoever's listening, but I think it's, I think what you're saying is so important, though, that you have to know what you're going after in order to make a decision like that. Because when you say you went after the gold star, the validation, you don't even mean for yourself. You mean because the industry is going to look for those types of things if you want to keep making movies. Is that right?
Correct. And it's being able to have the conversation at the cocktail party or in the pitch email or the whatever future conversation, in response, or, you know, or get representation or any of those things of saying, hey, you know, I made a movie and it got distribution, you know, or, you know, it got acquired, like throwing around the word, it got acquired for distribution. You know, what that means in practice is, like, you know, there's going to be, you know, revenue share and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, there's an effort that I don't think is necessarily wrong to, you know, need to legitimize yourself as a independent filmmaker. And I, you know, that's kind of been my focus through Vanilla. I'm super proud of the work, but, and hope as many people as possible see it. My expectations of making, you know, a bunch of cash on it, really small. So, right, and knowing that, like, this is going to be a stepping stone for me. And so, what's the optimal stepping stone look like for me is, you know, as much validation as possible, so that when that next script goes out and that next deck goes out and, you know, whatever agent or manager or actor is reading the blurb about who I am, because they've never heard of me, you know, I want that to be as formidable as possible. I don't know. I mean, there's no real right answer, I think, to the distribution piece. I think if you have the time and the marketing savvy to, like, tackle it yourself and the investment to make, I think, I mean, I'd be like, I'd be super curious around, you know, if I took some time and a little bit of cash and said, all right, I'm going to, like, treat this like I'm selling a product online and try to, you know, set up Facebook ads and target them and improve the funnels and the click-throughs and, like, you know, can you make X dollars by marketing a movie that you made and make some money back? Like, that's a pretty inspiring way to control your own destiny. And I definitely, like, am missing out on that as a result. And, but, you know, it's the trade-off I made. So here we are.
Yeah. Well, maybe on the next one.
Yeah. I mean, at the next one, I think very, like, I definitely feel more educated, and that's the thing. I feel so educated by each piece of the puzzle that I'm like, all right, next time I go into the distribution piece, like, I'm going to have some different opinions or different, no, more like just knowing the different questions to ask, I think, is a lot of it too.
Right. Yeah. So I want to visit one more thing before we wrap up here, which is these little kind of vignettes. Because I kind of misspoke. You do some social posting, but it's always like these awesome, like high quality little short film things. I would describe them as just like little windows into relationships. Can you tell us a little about where these ideas came from and how you started creating them?
Yeah. I mean, I think as I was going through the vanilla process, so I made vanilla and then it was going into festivals and I was kind of just like, going back to earlier in our conversation, I just always like to be making things. And I still feel like I learned so much making vanilla that I just wanted to continue making things. And so I'll just get together with some friends and shoot something for 4 or 5 hours on the weekend. Generally, it's like starts as like a half idea or kind of like a funny thought. They've kind of started to take a little bit more shape around this fictional couple that's kind of like always on the verge of breaking up. They're like in a relationship out of like convenience, kind of. It's kind of like they both know they're not each other's person, but they're still together. And so they've kind of taken shape with that, with my friend Ellie, who's super funny. And we met through, I was working on one of her projects. And they're really, I think of them as like low pressure exercises in, you know, writing and directing and filmmaking, where the goal is to spend $0, you know, if possible. We'll often like buy people food for the half day, but they're generally 3 or 4 pages. You know, brainstorm, workshop the script for a week or two, sometimes the day before, or sometimes, you know, a few weeks, and then find time on everyone's calendar, generally from like, you know, noon to 7 or something that's like enough time to shoot 3 or 4 pages, but not, you know, doesn't make anyone disgruntled that they're working for free or have to get up early. And, and it's a totally like opt-in chill, hey, we're going to do this thing. Like, would love to have you.
That's so cool.
And so, you know, some come out better than others, and they're always kind of like fun. And I always try to like learn something new and challenge myself in a different way. And I think it's honestly just I'm still learning and trying to improve as a director. And the more time I can spend on set with, you know, you have 5 minutes left and 2 shots to go. And
yeah.
You know, you're hungry and tired and you have to make the decision, like the better, I guess I hope to get. And it's also been a really fun way to get some, you know, more connections with other people in the independent film world in New York, where people will see these short little videos and say, hey, I love that. I'm happy to help on the next one. And, you know, you can work with a DP or an actor, and it, you know, it's just no commitment, no money's exchanged. It's just a half day.
Nice.
So they've been really kind of like fun little social moments, as well as kind of like filmmaking lessons for me. And then yeah, the goal is something you click on online and you're like, ah, that was a fun 2 minutes.
and no, that's exactly what they are too. And I love them. I love whenever you release one and immediately watch them and get they're just a real pleasure to watch. which I kind of want to ask about that, about your writing. So I think one of your strong suits, I mean, you have a lot of strong suits, but one of your strong suits is just dialogue and making characters feel natural and feeling like real life, while also providing all the tension and humor and everything else that goes along with that. Do you have any tips for writers who want to write better dialogue? Cause dialogue is one of the questions I get the most, and it's kind of a hard thing to answer. So I'm going to put that off on you.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good question. And, thank you for the compliment. I guess I think of it a little bit like a puzzle. I almost think of like, oh, here's like a funny thought or a funny idea or a funny line. And then I almost try to be like, okay, that exists now. I've had that idea. How do I go backwards 3 or 4 steps and like almost like start the conversation in a way that feels like a natural, inevitable thing to say? So if you start with the joke or the insight or the thing you think is like clever or whatever, you know, you know, we're all writers, so we all think we're clever to some extent, even though that might not be true. starting with that like little idea of like, ooh, that's a kind of a funny idea. And then like, how do you back up into that? Is, I guess,
right,
a lot of times how I think about it.
It's very much a comedian way to do things, right? Like you land on the punchline, so you have to figure out kind of mathematically how to set it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, you have the punchline and then you're like, well, I mean, honestly, the beauty of dialogue is like, well, the other character is going to have to say something that makes that statement or question or interaction like feel normal. And then you, yeah, I almost like back my way out of it. And then at some point you get to a place where you're like, okay, this is just like a normal, you know, you, it doesn't feel like your joke is out in the open. It feels like your joke is kind of like safely padded. And then I don't know, I'm kind of, ideally you can make those like as densely packed as possible, so it feels both like easy and natural, but also, you know, funny and interesting. And I think like what's tricky about it, or like what I've found at least, is I'll write a first draft and I'll be like, oh, this is pretty good. I'll write a second draft and polish it. And then I'll go back to like a third draft and need to like change a line. And then it'll like the whole dialogue will like unravel and I'll have to kind of like start
like
from scratch. Kind of. Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So, I don't know, but I'm still, you know, learning every time I write and, do more drafts is like, I guess my yeah, I guess kind of, yeah, what I'm like, I guess I'll just keep doing drafts until I think it's good and then give it to someone and see if they think it's good and then do more drafts. And then once I get absolutely sick of it, then I'll be like, all right, cool. Now we should probably make it. Cause I don't even know if this is good anymore.
Yeah, that's brilliant. All right, cool. So we're going to wrap up. I wrap up the podcast with the same five questions every time. So these are quick answers. First is, what do you write?
What do I write? I think I write, I'd say relationship comedy, if I was going to give myself like a brand.
Yeah, that's a good one. What's your proudest accomplishment?
I'm going to say vanilla. You know what? You caught me in the week when this thing came out and I'm feeling proud of it. So I'm going to say vanilla, this movie I made.
The prime of your life. How do you define success?
I would say accomplishing the goal you set out to accomplish. I don't know. I like not necessarily the quality, which is maybe this is like a bad way to define success. I don't know. But
there's no wrong answer.
That you almost like the finishing, you know, it's like, did you finish? And right. Finishing is, I think, a success. Like, I think for me, I'm like, all right, I'm going to start this thing. And if I finish it, then I'm like, hey, it sucked, but I finished it. And that's a success to me.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. What writers do you most look up to and why?
Oh, man. Now I feel like underread and underwatched. I mean, I'm just going to say like, Kumail Nanjiani right now, just because like I recently watched The Big Sick and I was, yeah, like, and he wrote it with his wife, I forget her name, I apologize, but like I just watched that movie and I was like, oh man, it's like funny, it has heart, and like it's entertaining. And
I think that's a fantastic answer. It's a wonderful movie, and also very much a Will Dennis kind of vibe to it, if that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those where I don't often be like, oh man, I wish I'd made that movie, or like, that's the kind of movie I want to make, but that's definitely in that ballpark.
Yeah. To interrupt real quick, and just one more question, but the rom-com thing is generally not thought of as like the cool genre of, you know, indie filmmaking. Is that what draws you to the kind of romantic or relationship comedy kind of thing, as you put it?
I mean, I think comedy is like just what I find most fun by nature, yeah, of the larger genre. And then I think, I mean, relationships, I think of like relationships as just like endlessly fascinating, and why people behave, and, you know, how much money and time and effort we spend all just trying to connect with other people. And I think it's almost more around like relationships and relationship dynamics than romance specifically. But I mean, it is funny that it has such like kind of a cheesy connotation. And I think it's kind of the fault of like, the, I guess like the genre getting this weird stigma. Because if you think about, you know, sex and sex and jokes, you know, what's not cool about that, you know?
Right.
That's like a pretty rock and roll.
Yeah.
Rock and roll, yeah, genre. But when you say rom-com, it's like, oh, that's going to be like.
That's really true.
Kind of cheesy. And
yeah.
But I don't know. I definitely, it's definitely not, I wouldn't say the stuff I write is rock and roll. It's very like, it definitely has some earnestness and some cheesiness and some self-awareness that I think is kind of fun to play with. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I like to think that the amount of time I spend with a piece of material is going to be long. So I want it to be like something that I think is fun. And that's comedy and relationships.
I think that's great.
Yeah. I mean, maybe someday I'll make like a sci-fi or something, which I have a couple in the back burner, but not in the near future, I don't think.
Well, I think we need guys like you to kind of, you know, reinvent and play with the genre and challenge what it can be, which I think is really great.
Yeah, it's
fine. All right, last question. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Probably just don't take things so seriously. My younger self was like pretty tightly wound as far as like getting, you know, as you can tell by our type A conversation, but like getting things done and accomplishing things. And, you know, I think being more in tune with the process and being more focused on the day-to-day process and less oriented towards the outcome. And that kind of is what I think led me to shift from, you know, tech focused, so to speak, to film focused, is just the process of film focus. It's just so much more interesting and fun and fulfilling. And I still love the tech work, but on a day-to-day basis, my experience doing my own startups was just pretty low on the fun scale. Let's call it that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. And then finally, where can we find out more about you and Vanilla? Where can people watch it right now?
Yeah,
where can people see you not post on social media?
Yeah. I mean, people can see me occasionally post on social media, on Instagram, Willie Dennis, WILLYDENNIS. That's on Instagram and Twitter, and, you know, follow me there. And, the movie I made, Vanilla, is available all over the place. If you're in the US and Canada, Amazon, iTunes, YouTube, Vimeo, Vudu. Yeah. All the places you might try to find a stream. I think it's on like Xbox and PlayStation 2. It's cool. It's fun to see it like in all these like funny streaming services.
Yeah, that's great. Very cool. Have you read all the reviews that have been coming out from it? People always say like at some level that you don't, but surely at this level you read everything, right?
I've read a lot of them. Publicist I worked with did a good job, so I haven't read all of them yet. And I'm kind of like, I don't know, each one makes me kind of nervous. So I'm like, I'm both happy that I got a review. And then I'm also like, oh no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've read a fair amount of them, and they're always, you know, they're always wrong. No, they're always interesting to hear people's take on it. And it's funny because I'm always like, oh man, it's so nice of them to watch.
Right. I know, at least.
I'm like, oh, it's so kind that they watched.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I highly recommend it to people. It's a film that I absolutely love. I bought it the other night, but I'm waiting to watch it with my wife, who is busy at work this week. But
thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate that. And I'll buy you an ice cream next time we see each other and we hang out.
Nice. Yeah, I look forward to doing that soon. All right. Thanks a bunch, Will. This was great.
Yeah, had a blast. Appreciate it, Hudson.
Thanks again to Will for sharing his journey with us. And if you're looking for some direction on your own journey, I'd love for you to check out Blast Off, our free one-hour workshop to help you launch and accelerate your screenwriting career. You can sign up at scriptblast.com. And if you're listening and thinking, man, this is a great vibe on this podcast, where can I find more screenwriters who are actually supportive of each other and have this same positive attitude? You can check out our community Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/scriptblast. Or you can always reach out to me personally at Hudson@scriptblast.com. See you guys next time.